How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Everybody, welcome to the Reigning Jays podcast. I'm John Corrales, also with Jay King once again for the sixth episode of the podcast. Jay, three games this week for the Celtics. Two really impressive wins sandwiched around a loss to the Pacers again.
As usual, loss to the Pacers. Paul George has killed the Celtics this year, but still promising signs. Three wins in the last four games, three double-digit wins, and really play. I thought the Atlanta game was the best they've played yet. They didn't hit shots. They couldn't shoot. The first half was just, they got good shots, missed all of them. But they were still tied at halftime against one of the better teams in the NBA, probably the second best team in the Eastern Conference. And when their defense is that good, which it has been all year, pretty much, they're gonna stay in games. They're going to give themselves a chance, even though that offense still isn't functioning nearly at a high enough level.
Yeah, I was really impressed by the Bucks win, just because the level of execution. I just thought they really executed at a very high level against the Bucks. Obviously, their execution down the stretch against Atlanta was amazing, and that final couple of minutes after. They were disjointed. They had a 3.5 minute stretch where they didn't score at all. They were running a play that no one really could. It just looked horrible. Brad Stevens called a timeout, and they came out of that timeout. Boom. Eight straight points. No, wait. It was 10 straight points, I think. A couple of key stops on the other end. Just amazing. Out of the timeout, to go on a run like that down the stretch, clutch shooting, big time defense. That is really, really impressive. That's a high level of play for this Celtics team. Really, really impressive.
Yeah, and especially from where they were in that first half, they just could not shoot. And to go down the stretch, Evan Turner had missed his first nine shots, makes a couple big ones. You know, Isaiah Thomas had struggled a little bit, hits those two huge corner threes to keep them ahead. Jay Crowder hadn't hit anything for a few games even. He knocks down the huge three, then the pull-up jumper. They were moving the ball, getting good shots. And again, that's one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference. And so to do that, especially with Oklahoma City and Houston coming up next, was a big win, I think, to get back to 500 before you go on the road to meet those two teams.
Let me ask you a question here. Do you see a little more fire out of Brad Stevens this season, a little more animation, a little more force behind what he's saying to these guys?
I think kind of underratedly, he's been animated for the past 2 years too. Like, he has moments where he gets fired up, and he's not always that super even keeled guy that everyone makes him out to be. I think what makes it seem like he is that guy is because I guess he is more than most coaches. There's a lot of coaches who are crazy out there. But he does. I mean, he's a fiery guy. He really competitive guy, and so I don't know if that's a change. I do think that he has changed from the start of his tenure with the Celtics. Jared Sullinger always talks about how much more comfortable he is now with his conviction. That he's always like believed in himself, but it just keeps growing and growing as he has more time in the NBA. And maybe that's it. But, I mean, he did get a technical foul. Brad was in the preseason, so I don't think there's a huge difference though.
I just find it interesting, and maybe you just don't see certain things, we have a tendency, just like a human tendency, when you don't see something, even if it's been happening for a while, you think it's new. And I do notice, like, there was that one time where he pulled Isaiah Thomas. I forget what game it was. Was it Milwaukee?
Where yeah, he chewed him out for not switching on to Chris Middleton in the dribble handoff.
And I just had not seen that. And it just some of the comments that he makes, they feel a little more like he's infusing a little more sarcasm, you know?
Yeah, no, I will say this. He is definitely a little bit more sarcastic this year. And it's like a funny development because I think what it is the past couple of years has been he needs to build this team up. And he needs to make this team believe they can win. Now this team believes it can win. And he kind of needs to not keep them in check, but he's more comfortable with their belief. So he doesn't have to pump them up all the time, I think, is what it is.
That's a good point.
That would be my guess to what it is. But he definitely does seem a little bit more sarcastic sometimes. I would agree with that. I mean, it's not like he's sarcastic, actually sarcastic, but from a Brad Stevens standpoint, from the standard that he has set over the last 2 years, he is a bit more sarcastic.
Yeah, I just liked his comment last night. Well, we've got one game in a row where we've rebounded well, so that's pretty funny. And he wouldn't have said that, I don't think, last season. But that's a good point. You make a good point that now it's a new kind of challenge for Brad Stevens to kind of, I do think keep them in check is a good way to put it, because they came in with a bit of hype for the first time in his tenure. This is a team that's come in with some hype that is expected to win more than it loses. So you have to, as a coach, kind of, especially with some of these guys who are young while they're doing it, it's easy to, when you're a young kid, 22, 23, to read the headlines and buy into the hype a little bit more than you would when you were, you know, 28, 29, you've been through it a few times. So just an interesting side note for Brad Stevens. So the Celtics defense, still very, very good. They're fourth in defensive rating behind Miami, San Antonio, and Golden State. That is really, really impressive. Jay Crowder's 3.5 steals lead the league. He had, what, 4 more last night?
Yeah, I'm almost positive he's on pace to set an NBA record in steals per game. So Jay Crowder, and it's come from kind of nowhere. Obviously, he's been a good defender, but I think his career high was like 0.9 steals per game before this. And obviously, he's playing more minutes now, but just great change. And it's because he's in the right spots. It's not like he's gambling. Like, he is making great rotations to get these. You know, like he's rotating down to the open big man and taking away passes. He's been really, really good. And they're forcing turnovers. They keep forcing turnovers. That's not going to change. They're a really tough defense. I believe in this defense fully, and especially if Amir Johnson can be as good as he was against the Hawks. Because Amir Johnson, after a couple of games where he didn't make as big an impact as he normally does, he was everywhere against Atlanta. From the first play when he rotated over to swat Al Horford at the rim. I mean, that's their front court offensively, Atlanta's, is almost as big a challenge as you can get for other front courts, because Horford, Paul Millsap, those guys can stretch the floor. They can put it on the floor. They can beat you so many different ways. And Amir Johnson was so good. He was diving on the floor, 3 blocks, 3 steals. The one play I was most excited about from him was when he actually got a foul. It was like he slid over to stop Horford, cut off Horford's path in the pick and roll, and then was quick enough to rotate back to his own guy, Millsap, and block him, but he got called for the foul. And the Celtics just haven't had that guy who has enough athleticism to do that for a couple of years, since Kevin Garnett left, really. And now I'm not comparing Amir Johnson to Kevin Garnett. Not comparing him to Kevin Garnett at all. Kevin Garnett is the best defender probably that I've seen in my lifetime. But Amir Johnson does have a lot more athleticism than other Celtics bigs, and he's quick enough to do that, which is huge for their defense. And if he's as good as he was against Atlanta, then that changes a lot for their defense. It makes those guards, it gives them the opportunity to be even more aggressive than they have been. And I really think Amir, I mean, that was a great, great performance from him last night. And I'm not even talking about the offense. Forget the offense. He scored 17 points. He's not always going to score 17 points. That defense was awesome.
I agree. And that foul was terrible.
Yeah.
That was not a foul. That was a horrible bad call. That was a bad call. But I agree. I agree. Amir Johnson in that role, the way he played last night, if he can do that, if he can do that most games, I'm not going to say every game, but if he can do that most games, that changes a lot. It changes, and it changes how we have to think of these rotations, because you have to start him like this. And I've been on the bandwagon of limiting, not limiting his minutes, but really, much like Isaiah Thomas, you have to balance his minutes, because he's not going to give you 38 minutes a game. So, but to offset the starting unit's offensive problems, you need to play that level defense to spark breaks, to get guys out there, and to maybe create some offense off of the defense. So you can't do that with Sullinger and, you know, who else would you start with that? Lee?
Yeah, maybe.
You know what I mean? Like
Olynyk.
Olynyk, yeah. You're just not going to recreate that. But when you start Sullinger and Johnson playing that level defense, now Sullinger can get into a rebounding position. He rebounds very well. That really, you know, you can help him play to his strengths, because he doesn't have to defend the rim, quote unquote. He can focus on other things defensively and protect the lane like he's taking charges and stuff. So now we're looking at, we go back to these rotations. We always talk about the rotations. Smart's back and healthy. Avery Bradley's going to be back soon enough. And then you're going to do the Smart, Bradley, Crowder, Johnson, Sullinger starting lineup, I assume, right? I mean, that's going to be your best defensive starting lineup on this team.
I would think, and I mean, that is a very good defensive lineup with Johnson, Crowder, Smart, and Bradley. Like that foursome. And then with Sullinger, who's played great so far this year, is rebounding the ball great, really had a great start to the season. I think that's what you do with the starting line. Isaiah Thomas, you know, he hit a few shots late against the Hawks. He hasn't played nearly as well with the starting lineup since he was inserted as a starter. And that's kind of been not a huge issue so far, because obviously they've won three of the last four games. But, you know, it's just something to watch, I think. And I do think, as we've said all along, we've both agreed on this, the way to maximize his minutes is to put him back with the bench unit, where Kelly Olynyk and Jonas Jerebko can space the floor.
Yeah. It's so funny with Isaiah Thomas. It doesn't matter what he does, if he starts or comes off the bench, he always seems to be scoring at the same time in the game.
Yeah.
You know? Like, if you start him, he won't score very much in the first quarter until, like, the end of the first quarter or into the second quarter. And then he scores at the end of the game. So To me, that just says that he's doing better against the other team's second unit, and he's just he struggles. And to put him with Marcus Smart, it's not bad, but having Isaiah Thomas really bring the ball up, we've seen it especially against Indiana, and well, even with Milwaukee, he struggles being the primary guy handling the ball in that role. So I don't want to belabor points. We both agree. I think that we've seen enough to know that Isaiah Thomas is great off the bench. We are loving the Olynyk Jerebko combo. Now RJ Hunter has been included in that combo a little bit.
Yeah.
Now when Avery Bradley comes back, is Brad Stevens going to find a way to keep Hunter in there? Because Hunter obviously can shoot. He had a great shot last night where his quick release really was – it highlighted his quick release, because he had the defender closing out, and that was a shot that might have been blocked, or a shot that some guys wouldn't even take. That would be normally an up fake and then drive or dribble, clear some space, and then make a decision. But he just caught it and shot it and nailed the shot. You don't have that on this team. He's the only guy who can hit that shot. He's the only guy who can release the ball that quickly. Does he still have minutes when Avery Bradley is around and requiring minutes?
I'm not sure if he's in the rotation yet. I think he's been a bit more up and down than most people have acknowledged on Twitter while kind of falling in love with his game.
Dude, just talk to me directly. I know you're talking about me. Just say it.
Which game was so the Indiana game the other night? Was it the Indiana game? No, the Milwaukee game when he was really good. But he like threw a pass off David Lee's foot. He threw a really ill-advised turnover where he tried to throw it through traffic to Amir Johnson. Against the Hawks, he went baseline, like just a gross move that got swatted. Like he'd never had a chance to get that shot up. So I think he's had more rookie mistakes than most people want to admit. I do think he has great potential, especially within their system, because he is a good shooter. He's a versatile defender with size, 6'7", length, long, long wingspan. So I think that he's the type of guy who will develop into a rotation player this year. I'm not sure what time of the season it'll be. I'm not sure he deserves those minutes yet. He's shooting like 30%. So we love the shots where he pulls up from like 30 feet and drains them, or the quick release from the wing that you were talking about. He's got such a smooth stroke. But I do think right now it's like he's borderline rotation. And he can help. He's very obviously smart IQ, high IQ basketball player. He's going to be good, I think, and especially within the system, as I said. But I'm not sure he's worthy of minutes yet. I'm not sure Stevens trusts him all the time yet. Like obviously, he didn't go back in the second half against the Hawks.
Right.
So we'll see. We'll see. I think he's had a really strong start to the season for a rookie. And I do think he'll find a way into the rotation and help this season.
Yeah, as much as I like to play it up and really, really celebrate, you know, with my nickname Smooth Criminal and you know, drive the RJ Hunter hype train, I do that more for effect. And because I love the good things that he does are really good.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't just do like, oh, that was a nice thing that he did. When he does something good, it's freaking amazing. So, but he has had his ups and downs. So now this brings me to a tweet that I got, and your reaction was funny because you're like, really? Are we going to talk about this?
I guess we are.
Yes, we are. Now, but not directly the tweet. So the tweet was, when does RJ Hunter get Avery Bradley's minutes, and has Avery Bradley plateaued? Now, I know that he's not going to get Avery Bradley's minutes right now. But the sentiment that Avery Bradley has plateaued is not unique to that tweet. There are plenty of people who say that this is as good as Avery Bradley is going to get. And now this is what I want to talk about. Is this as good as Avery Bradley is going to get? Is this the guy that we have moving forward? Let's just start there. Let's start there. Is this the Avery Bradley that is going to exist as an NBA player for the rest of his career?
I mean, what is he in, year six or year seven? I don't think
this is his sixth year in the league. You know, yeah it's six years, and he's 24 years old.
Yeah, I don't think there will be huge changes. Like, he's not going to suddenly become a point guard. He's not going to be a guy who racks up huge assist numbers. That's not going to be Avery Bradley. I do think he'll continue to make tweaks to his shot selection. I do think when they get more penetrators, more creation from other guys, he'll look better offensively because he'll just spot up and shoot, which he's very good at. But yeah, I mean, he'll continue improving. I think he's improved every year. And when you watch the tape, like, he's turned into a defensive monster. Like, I watched the tape of the Milwaukee Bucks game. No, it was the Wizards game. And Stevens called a timeout. They were down 6-2. And they had given up three. The next possession, Avery Bradley did not leave Bradley Beal. Like, he chased him around five or six screens, like, somehow got over every screen. Like, he's a wizard going around screens. Just cannot get screened. And so to say that RJ Hunter, who has just played a few minutes, is shooting 30% and does some nice things, But like Avery Bradley is one of the better perimeter defenders in the league. He's a good shooter. He does a lot. I think there are obviously issues with him. He's not a, going to be a guy who penetrates or helps other guys play better offensively. But like that's a good player. And people, because he's done a lot of the same things for years, I think people take some of that for granted. So, no, I'm not ready to talk about whether RJ Hunter will supplant Avery Bradley. It's not going to be this year, but even long term, I'm not ready to say that RJ Hunter, this guy who has done a few good things here and there, is going to take the spot of a guy who started for three or four straight years. Like this, it's not to even start thinking about that yet. I understand.
It's not even about RJ Hunter. The thing that drew me to that tweet was not the notion that RJ Hunter is going to supplant Avery Bradley at any point this year or next year or whatever. I don't know what Hunter's going to be. This might be as good as Hunter ever gets. But the question about Bradley, I find it interesting because yes, he can be an elite perimeter defender. He can on occasion hit a bunch of shots in a row. But he's never going to be the penetrator. He's never going to be a distributor. He's never going to be able to handle any point guard duties. So I wonder if this is as good as he's going to get. He's not going to take any more massive leaps forward. Like he's not going to suddenly become a tremendously better shooter. He's not going to suddenly change his attitude, is he? And get to the rim all the time and get a bunch of free throws, even though he has the ability and he should. So moving forward, you know, 2-3 years down the line, and this is a question that I get randomly on occasion, what's Avery Bradley's role when the Celtics are a championship team?
This is funny because literally the other night I was talking to a rival scout, and he was asking me that same thing. Like, what is Avery Bradley going to be for this team in a couple years? What's their vision for him? And he likes Bradley's game. He likes parts of Bradley's game, but he's an undersized shooting guard who can't really dribble or pass. And like, when you look at it like that, but I do think he guards bigger guys. And I don't know whether he's a starter coming off the bench, but he'll help that team whenever the time comes, he'll help that team. And maybe RJ Hunter will help the team too, you know. Maybe RJ Hunter will be there knocking down threes. And RJ Hunter, I will say this, offensively, because of his passing and things like that and the way he sees the floor, I think he has a higher offensive floor than Avery Bradley. Offensive ceiling, rather, than Avery Bradley. I will say that. That's, to me, pretty obvious watching RJ Hunter play. But let's back off the RJ Hunter hype train a little bit. Let's allow Avery Bradley to be the solid defender he is, and let's just see where things go before we start talking about all this stuff.
Right. I'm just curious. I think I want to see what Bradley, what role he has in a couple of years. Like this is that to me is going to be an interesting arc for him to see what do they move him to the bench eventually? Does he play the Bruce Bowen type of role? Is that what he's going to ultimately be? You know, come out, play defense, knock down a couple of shots, you know, sit in the corner, hit three. I'd be happy with that. I'd be very happy with that. But, you know, but it has nothing to do with RJ Hunter, future MVP. All right. Let's get into some Twitter questions because we got a bunch. Let's go with, because we've been talking this a little bit. This comes from Michael Nye. On the Celtics offense, are there new sets or wrinkles that can be run, or are there problems just the lack of talent? Since we're in this discussion here about the rotations and the offense, once everybody's healthy, once we're back to full strength, and now we've got this starting unit that we've been talking about, does that count as a wrinkle for their, you know, that could help their offense? I mean, what do you do with, how do you get scoring out of Smart, Bradley, Crowder, Johnson, and Sullinger.
Yeah, I think, for the most part, I've thought they've gotten pretty good shots. You know, they're taking a lot of threes, but they're all good shots. The first half against the Hawks, they were something like 4 for 15, I want to say, maybe 5 for 18 from behind the arc, which is horrendous. But they were all pretty good shots. They were open for the most part. And if you're gonna hit 27% of your threes, and they're open, like, what are you gonna do? What is a coach gonna do to get better looks than wide open threes for guys who should be pretty good shooters? Like, even Marcus Smart, the ones he was a 34%, whatever it was last year. That's a efficient shot if he makes it at that mark. But right now, a lot of guys underperforming from the arc, from Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, just Kelly Olynyk, although he was great against the Hawks, really great.
Yes, he was. He was.
Yeah, Olynyk, let's go with him. One thing I do want to see, more Olynyk touches. When he gets and like is a 7'2" guard out there, that's dangerous. And I loved that he took 13 shots in 17 minutes against Atlanta. Because if he's going to do that, he's one of their best shooters. It doesn't matter that he's 7 feet. He needs to fire away. And, you know, he had that one play where he came up on the left wing and pump fake, leaned in, and just tried the most ambitious, like shot maybe of his career. That might have been, like, most thirsty shot of his career. And it was awful. But it was also a great sign because they need that more often. And I think he's been far more aggressive this year, and they need him to be. I think if he plays more minutes, the offense will be helped. I think more small ball minutes will help the offense. I think Isaiah back to the second unit will help the offense. And we'll see. There's just not a lot of shooting on the roster, and it was an issue that plagued them last season. They were 27th. It's an issue that's plagued them, obviously, through 8 games so far this season. And Stevens, I mean, what more can you do? You're getting good shots. A guy, at some point, it's just guys have to knock them down. I don't know what.
So the answer is it's a lack of talent. Well, a lack of ability at this point. I know they didn't shoot very well. The numbers I think look worse than they were a little bit last night, because how many of those tip-ins, that kind of shot attempts, didn't go down? They probably were 0 for 10 in two possessions worth of tip-ins at one point. So, sometimes the shooting's not going to go. Sometimes, and hopefully this all balances out. I'm just looking at the numbers here. Jared Sullinger is shooting 42% from three, which is actually a bit down. If I'm not mistaken, he's kind of cooled off a little bit from deep. Avery Bradley, who I've just banished to the bench for the rest of his career, apparently, is shooting 33%. Hunter shooting 30%. Isaiah Thomas shooting 29%. So, I mean, those are not great numbers. When Jared Sullinger's basically your best free throw shooter. And how about Jonas Jerebko, by the way, has only shot 4 three-pointers?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
That's another issue. He's playing a lot more three this year, and I don't think he's nearly as effective as a small forward as he was in those small ball units of last year. They've gone to some small ball the last few games more often, although against the Hawks they kind of abandoned that. But that to me is – I don't think he's nearly maximized when he's at three. He doesn't get those open shots because guys are sagging off him. He doesn't have the – athleticism advantage against guys, so he's kind of minimized in his role when he is that small forward. But that this is going to be what this team is. This team has a great defense and has an offense that's going to come and go with shooting. And sometimes it'll be like Kelly Olynyk's raining down shots, Jay Crowder's hit threes, Isaiah's getting to the paint, and everything looks so beautiful. And other times there are just going to be droughts. This team is not. Doesn't have enough offensive talent that it score consistently. That's just not going to be what this team is. They do need to improve their offense. they need to be somewhere around like 15th in the league. If they can be 15th in the league and all top, now all of a sudden you're looking at a really good team. If you're just average offensively, and part of that is turnovers, they've had turnover issues.
Yep.
Which I think will get better as the season goes on. They were a really good team taking care of the ball last season, but they're going to have droughts, and they're just going to have to live with it. That's just going to be who they are.
Fair enough. Okay, so then we got a tweet from Aaron who said, Tyler Zeller played. Yay. This is a question. I just hope you talk about him. All right, so Tyler Zeller played. That's a thing that happened. And he played well. You know, he didn't play much, but he played well in that short stretch. And this is just – and I saw that, you know, Brad talked about it last night. Tyler Zeller's a good basketball player. He's a good basketball player who, when he gets out there, can do some good thing on the floor. He's not a great basketball player, but he's solid. And if you put him out there and, you know, as long as he's not asked to guard Jahlil Okafor, apparently, then he'll be fine. But, you know, look, any kind of big-time post player, he'll play pretty good defense. But, look, some guys are just going to have your number. But who knows? Like we said last week, Tyler Zeller could get out there and just have a great game and then disappear for a while because the matchups aren't what they are. What are you going to do? There's too many guys, and somebody has to sit.
Yeah, and one thing Steven said was interesting was that most of that is because the offense has struggled and he wants to play more shooting. And obviously, I think the Zeller, Lee, those two guys will kind of at some point battle for minutes. I'm not sure Lee will always get those minutes. I mean, Zeller is a solid, solid big man. He does all the same things he did last year. He finishes, he can hit the mid-range jumper. He's still one of their best rim protectors and did that a lot better than most people expected last season. It's just they need more guys to space the floor, and he doesn't do that. So right now he's out. As we've repeatedly said, injuries will happen. Stevens will find the right matchup where Zeller can play some minutes. And at some point he's going to make an impact. It's not a question of when, but if. I mean, this – a month ago, you could have made the argument they should have been offering him a $10 to $12 million per year extension.
Right.
And now he's not on court.
He might get $10 million a year next year to play basketball. If it's not with the Celtics, it'll be somewhere.
Yeah.
Which sounds crazy, but you know, the numbers are inflated because that's going to be the equivalent of like a $6 million a year contract when the salary cap is, you know, keeps going up. You know, in 2-3 years, to pay a guy $10 million a year is nothing. So, but.
Yeah. DMPs today, $10 million per season tomorrow. So.
What a world. What a world. You know, quickly on David Lee, yeah, I think he's found like a little bit of a role. Like, I think he's been used pretty well, and he's been fairly effective in the minimized role now. Like, I think this is what he should be. I think he should be off the bench and doing what he's done over the past few games. I think he's been okay.
Yeah, and I think he said the other day that he's starting to not be tired on the court, which you can look at it two ways. You can look at it like, man, it's disappointing he wasn't in shape when he actually arrived at training camp and like went through the entire preseason and everything like that. But also, I think it's more promising because it wasn't that he's washed up in those first few games when he was getting blocked all the time and not finishing anything. It was that he wasn't completely in shape. And so I think it's more promising than anything that he no longer feels tired on the court and really in great shape when he showed up, because he is getting better. He's obviously getting better. And I think it helps him, I've said this a lot, to play opposing benches because you don't have those shot blockers on those opposing benches. And he's really done a nice job finishing for probably 5 games now. And as you said, he's finding that niche. I still don't know whether I kind of think they'd be better off just going small and not playing Lee those minutes. As good as he's been, I wonder how it would affect their team if they played Olynyk at 5, Jarepko at 4, and just said, okay, guys, let's go run small, let's go wild, and let's see if we can get some offensive flow.
I love it.
So I don't know whether that's the answer. I don't know. You know, David Lee, obviously he's done a good job of whenever he's on the court, but I just don't know if he's the best fit. I don't know. I would try to not sneak more minutes because it's probably their best lineup. I would try to give more minutes to the smaller bench lineups.
I like it. I mean, I'm all for it. We've talked about it before. You know, out there, Jarebko, Olynyk, and then who else do you put out there?
Turner?
Yeah.
Your boy?
My boy Turner.
Just because he gives you that defensive versatility, and then you can switch, like, four positions. And that's huge because, I mean, there in that Milwaukee Bucks game, there was one possession where they switched like five times. Giannis was in the corner. Olynyk closed out to him. Giannis didn't really know what to do. Threw a cross-court pass, and Turner was there, went in for a dunk. When they're switching like that, and they're so versatile with that second small unit, that's really tough to play against. And, you know, we saw – I'm not comparing them to the Warriors, but the Warriors – part of the reason they've been so great is because they have like those long guys like Klay Thompson, Andre Iguodala, Draymond Green. Just they have waves of these similar sized guys who can switch everything. Harrison Barnes, and so the Celtics, they don't have that level of defense, but they have a lot of those similar guys like Turner, Crowder, Jarebko. They have guys like that who can switch everything. Even Olynyk can switch to a small for a few seconds at a time. So I love the defensive versatility that small lineup presents. And really the best basketball they've played has been against Washington with that small unit, has been against Milwaukee with that small unit. And that's when the offense gets going. And the defense has been unbelievable with those units.
Yeah, which is really weird to say. It's weird to me that we're talking about Kelly Olynyk, Isaiah Thomas, Evan Turner, whoever else I throw out there, that's a unit that's been playing good defense. That's not something that you would think that you would say.
One more point. Yeah. I think part of it is they just don't have a drop off. Like there's no weak link. Whoever they put on the court, they don't have that guy who shouldn't really be playing NBA minutes. And other teams do, and yeah, they take advantage of it. Against the Bucks, they were sending doubles off Johnny O'Brien, like just leaving him wide open, and the Bucks were finding him, and he just couldn't make plays. And so they have guys they can pick on, and other teams don't have that against them. So I think that's a huge, huge part of that unit's success is that they don't have the guy who shouldn't be out there, and other teams do.
That's a good point. Okay, another question here comes from Mike, who asks, how many games will R.J. Hunter start this season? He's already passed James Young in Brad's rotation. Well, we're 8 games in, so give him a couple more games to get, so I'd say about 70.
probably 90 because he's starting in
the
finals.
Because of the playoffs, yeah.
Probably finals MVP, too.
Yeah. No, he won't. If R.J. Hunter is starting this season, if it's not because of injury, then wow, he's playing out of his mind. But, you know, the only way he would start games this season would be some serious injury to a few guys. There'd be a few guys on the bench. Okay, Alex wants to know: can we escape November with a 500 or better record? It's a good question. Here we're now 4-4. Heading into a pretty mean stretch. We've got the Thunder and the Rockets. This James that they are probably going to lose.
Although Durant's not supposed to play for Oklahoma City, so that could be more winnable than first anticipated.
Right. But this would be the fourth straight game that Durant has missed against the Celtics.
Yeah, I never get to see Durant in person. It's so disappointing. I never get to see Durant in person. Ever. And the Thunder beat them every time, no matter what.
It doesn't matter. You still got a pretty damn good team over there. So I'm not going to – it makes it a little more promising, but I don't know. I'm not going to get my hopes up. So let's just say, I think I'm safe in assuming two losses here. So that gets to 4-6. Dallas at home. Can they beat the Dallas Mavericks?
Yes. Yes. I think they will beat the Mavericks. I think they will go small and pick on Dirk Nowitzki. Sorry, Dirk. You're awesome, awesome, awesome offensive player, but you can barely move, big fella. And you're going to get eaten alive by Jonas Jerebko.
He's going to be so pissed when he hears this. Okay. They beat Dallas to go to 5-6. Then the Nets home and home. Those are two wins. They better be two wins. So they'll go to 7-6. Then at Atlanta, can they beat Atlanta again?
So I'm going to say no in Atlanta. But, I mean, they could. They can beat anyone. They're good enough to beat anyone if they hit some shots. And even if they don't hit some shots, they can still beat the Hawks as they did last night.
I think Atlanta gets revenge. I think it's too much to ask for them to beat Atlanta twice like that. So that brings them back to 500. So now they are the theoretical 500 team going into the last four games of the month, which is Philadelphia, Washington, Orlando, and Miami.
So you beat Philadelphia and Orlando and then hope to sneak one of the other two, and boom, you're over 500.
There you go. There you go. So they can legitimately get to at least 500 and perhaps a game over 500. So, yes, the answer to Alex's question is yes, they can escape the month at about 500, which is amazing because when you originally look at the schedule – it didn't seem like that would be a possibility.
Especially when you lose twice to Indiana.
Yes. Right. Right. I mean, those were, you're supposed to at least split those games. So, all right. I like that. So that's huge because then the schedule eases up after that a little bit. And the Celtics could go on a little bit of a run. We just got one in here from Max who asks, what stands out to you the most about the Celtics so far this season? I'm gonna say it's the defense. This defense being this good, especially like discussed earlier with Crowder being as active as he is, getting into passing lanes and getting all those steals and starting breaks, that's been huge. And for the Celtics to be a top five defense at this point, that really more than anything stands out to me.
Yeah, and as I've said, I believe in the defense. I think this is no fluke. Like, this defense is really, really good. And they're going to keep giving guys, opposing teams, fits all year long. And, I mean, they're a powerhouse. We've talked about it before. Not enough people talk about this, how good Boston's defense has become without that true rim protector that everybody thinks a great defense needs to have. They've built it around perimeter defense, and now Amir Johnson, if he can normally be as good as he was against Atlanta, this is a powerful defense that will give opponents fits all year long. Like, you show up, guys, I'm sure guys on opposing teams show up for games and they're like, oh man, gotta play Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, and Marcus Smart again. Yeah. Like, this is... can I just get an easy night, guys? Like, just back off, Marcus. Just give me a little room, man. So, yeah, you don't want to play the Celtics this year if you're an opposing wing.
And there was a nice thing on Celtics.com where they brought in Amir Johnson, and they were talking about how they play the pick and roll, and you know, talking about ice. And essentially, the prevailing thought about how to play pick and roll is you show. That's how I was always taught. Guy sets a pick, the guy goes over the pick, and you show, which means, for people who don't know, you kind of step out and you basically block his path. You show him your numbers, and that gives his defender time to go back, and then you recover. But what they're doing is they're ice, which is they sag. And I saw Isaiah Thomas is actually doing that better than he gets credit for, because he's getting really into the body of the guy who's screening, and he's forcing, not all the time, but he's been forcing the guy, he's been playing it the right way. He's been forcing the guy to go under, giving the other defender a chance to kind of slide over. And the advantage is that you don't force another guy, another defender, to come rotate over and help. That's one less rotation people have to make. And the only thing you're giving up is a long two. So that's a defensive concept that has been installed under Brad Stevens, and I think is very effective.
Yeah, so I think this is pretty pretty important thing, I think, because icing has become like the rage in the NBA, and all the best defensive teams, for the most part, ice screens, which is forcing the ball handler away from the screen rather than over it. And the Toronto Raptors, according to a study by NBA.com last year, which is Amir Johnson's team, they hardly ever iced. They iced differently than literally any team in the NBA. So now Amir Johnson is learning a completely new different style of defense. And I think maybe that's been an issue for him as he tries to make the same defensive impact he had last year in Toronto now here in Boston. So I think it's taken him a little time to adjust to that, because it's a huge change going from, as you said, like guarding the actual screen to now the other guy, the ball handler, is coming the other way, and the rotations are different. Everything's a little bit different. So I think as he adjusts to that, he'll just keep getting better and better within the system.
Yeah, that is a term that is really starting to leak into the more casual fans' vernacular. You know, and that's how big it is. And it really is. It really is a monumental shift in how defenses played. Look, the NBA has been a pick and roll league for a long time, and this is just an innovation. And it is important, like you said. It's important because when you play a certain way your whole life, to come in and then play a different way, it does take some adjustment. But when you do it effectively, it really, really changes the defense. These guys are playing tremendous. And, you know, honestly, as a basketball nerd, I'm really kind of – I want to see what the reaction's going to be, because you have a thing that happens – and everybody starts doing it, and now some offensive genius like a Mike D'Antoni is going to say, "Hey, wait a minute," and they're going to do something different with the pick and roll, and it's going to force teams to adjust. So this is like advanced calculus. Casual fans might not. I hope I didn't lose you there with this, but this is going to be really. This is nuance. This is strategy. This is like the chess game between offensive and defensive minds, and I'm fascinated by it. Okay. The last few questions before we wrap up the show. Oh, it is that time, Jay. College questions.
College questions. Ben Simmons
college
talk.
College questions. Get ready for the Raymond Simmons. That is a horrible name. this is, yeah. So Mike and RJ Cooper. I'll always answer a question from an RJ. they ask Ben Simmons questions. So here's – so. Mike wants to know thoughts on Ben Simmons' college debut, and RJ asks, say the best-case scenario, we keep our Nets pick and somehow snag Simmons, where would he fit on this team? So I didn't watch the LSU game. I had to, you know, read up on it and watch the highlights, so I'll just be honest up there. I didn't see the whole thing, so I don't have full context of how he played. But this kid is 6'10", and in the highlights that I saw of him leading the break, looks so fluid out there, handling the ball, like not an issue at all. Not like a typical 6'10 guy bringing the ball up. He was just a guy dribbling and really smooth and making some really great passes, looking defenders off and finding the right guy and holding the ball long enough so his teammate can get into position, and then making a great like pocket pass for layup. I mean, just really good court vision from what I saw. and, you know, pretty athletic. But, of course, I'm talking about the highlights. So, of course, the highlights are going to look good. So I didn't see any of the bad stuff. But from by all accounts, it wasn't a spectacular debut. But he looks like the, you know, he kind of casually went out there and had a pretty impressive-looking performance. So, and the best case scenario, how does he fit in this team? If he's going to be the stud that he is, I don't know. If you fit the team around him, I suppose. I mean, that's – if he's that good and he's 6'10", he's kind of a wing player, then that's pretty amazing. You kind of work your way around him and just adjust. However you need to do it, whatever you need to do. Jay Crowder moves to the bench or something. I don't know. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. But, that's, you know, if you're able to draft a guy, number one, who's 6'10", and can do all the things that he's supposed to do, I don't know. You put him out there, and you kind of figure it out.
So the long-term starting five for the Celtics now includes R.J. Hunter forever and ever.
Yep.
And Ben Simmons, who has played a grand total of one college basketball game.
Yes. He has scored 11 points in his college career, and he's going to be the starting wing. Yeah.
I will say this. Yeah. Celtics fans are more excited about the pick from Brooklyn than they are about the Celtics. It doesn't matter to them what the Celtics do this year. It's kind of like house money. Like they can do whatever they want this year. They can make a run to the second round, Eastern Conference Finals, whatever. Like that's great. It would be awesome to see them advance that far. But everybody has that eye on the Brooklyn Nets, who are now 1-8, just lost to Rajon Rondo and the Sacramento Kings. Rondo is like back to being a permanent triple double, by the way.
He's like three triple doubles in four games or something like
that. Yep, he's back to Rondoing around. But the Nets are awful, and they're going to be awful. And that's just how it's going to be. And Celtics fans are just going to watch that and hope for Ben Simmons or Scal Labissiere or however you say his name or some other top five pick. And this could be the year where the Celtics' fortunes are changed forever. This could be the year. They could also drop to third or sixth in the draft and pick Ron Mercer or somebody like that. But I don't want to get...
You're off the show.
Yeah. So could have had...
Which brings us to the other Twitter question. I mean, we might as well just throw this in there. If we can't get Simmons, any early preference between Scal, Brown, Ingram, and Murray? I don't know. Can we please just... I'd like to see these guys actually play some college basketball, like more than 20 minutes of college basketball. You know, I don't know. I want to see how these guys play. I don't know. So the question is no. Answer is I have no preference at this point because who knows? And who knows with Ben Simmons? He looked good. I saw a minute and a half of highlights from him. I can't say anything. I can't make anything definitive about him. I don't know. I mean, he's the consensus number one pick before, you know, as a senior out of high school, before he even played any basketball at all. So. We'll see. But I love it. I love the excitement. I love the fact that we're you know, kind of getting giddy about this. I do want to mention, since you brought up Rondo, how pissed are Dallas fans about this? Like, this is the guy that they made the trade, and this is the Rondo they were hoping for. That was their last chance, in the Nowitzki era. That was it. They made it. They put all of their chips in on the Rondo deal, and he went over there and everything just went so horribly wrong, which we all know. And now he's in Sacramento dropping triple doubles every other night. How pissed would you be if he's got to be like the most hated man in Dallas at this point?
No, he's not, because DeAndre Jordan is. They don't even think about Rondo anymore.
That's true. Every piece of hatred. I totally spaced on that. That's right.
Every piece of hatred they have is directed at DeAndre Jordan. So they probably don't even remember Rondo played for them anymore, because for 24 hours or 48 hours or whatever it was, they thought they had DeAndre Jordan. They thought they had a future, and now they're probably going to finish in the lottery and send their pick to the Boston Celtics. So That's just how it goes. The Celtics fans should thank DeAndre Jordan every day for going back to the Los Angeles Clippers, because now the Celtics, not only are they going to get Ben Simmons, who will supplant Jay Crowder in the starting lineup immediately.
Yep, immediately.
But they will also get a lottery pick probably from Dallas. Mm-hmm. And they might go to the second round themselves. So, again, we always end up here because this is like the area, the so much hope for Boston right now with Brooklyn's pick. I mean, that pick just keeps looking better and better. And
yeah,
I can't believe they beat Houston. How the hell did they beat Houston?
I was just going to you said 1-8 and it just stuck a little needle in the side. Like, how do you beat the Houston Rockets? That's like, you know, that's one of those games where Houston was just like, "Up, oh, we're just going to show up." And show up and beat the Nets, cuz everybody shows up and beats the Nets. And they didn't.
Yeah.
Houston's a weird team. I don't know. Something's a little off with them. I'm not going to say I follow them very closely, but something feels off about them. And then they play better when Dwight Howard's not on the floor. I don't have any faith in that team. They're a good team, but I don't have any faith in them making any real noise. I just don't.
One of the weirdest stats of the season is that they are one of the few teams hovering with near Celtics levels of 3-point inaccuracy. Like, they have been awful shooting the ball, which is weird because they've always been that team that fires away and hits a ton of threes, and now they're misfiring like the Celtics have, which is no good, which is very, very no good. So
very no
yes,
good.
Very, very no good. So we always end up here. Brooklyn Nets pick. The shining light for Celtics fans, no matter how good they look the night before, no matter how good they look that night, the next thing you do as soon as the Celtics finish is go check to see what the Brooklyn Nets did. literally every night I finish my game recap, and then I go to the app on my phone that has scores, and I check to see what the Nets did or are doing. And it's almost always
beautiful.
Very great news. Very, very good for the Celtics.
Love it. It's a great place to end.
Yep.
Okay. And I will say on a serious note, real life in the world has been pretty bad over the past couple of days. So all I want to say is, everyone, please be good to one another. This is fun. We're having fun talking about basketball. But in the real world, let's just please be good to one another. We will see you next week for another Rain and Jays podcast.